Hey guys, welcome to the Titanium Vault. I'm your host, RJ Bates III, and today I'm sitting down with Dane Ballwinkle. How you doing, Dane?
Doing great, man. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Yeah, excited to have you. So obviously by the title, we have a lot to talk about today. So you're here to talk about your real estate journey. Then also it looks like you're doing stuff in oil and gas and also crypto. So I'm excited about that because a lot of times when I get bios of guests, it's like, all right, what are we going to talk about? Like, you know, we're in like the 300 episode mark. You know, it's like I've done real estate, right?
Right.
So I'm excited to hear some of the stuff that I don't know a whole lot about, oil and gas and crypto and stuff like that. But give me some background. How did you get started as an entrepreneur and what was your real estate journey like?
Yeah, man. So I was very much in the, like many people, right, in the whole mindset where I could go educate myself to a good job with benefits and whatnot. And that's exactly what I did. In fact, I was so scared of selling. I had this terrible job where I was trying to get people to show up to, what's it called? To timeshare presentations in college. So I was knocking on doors, telling people we had this cool program, they could get a free trip if all they did was show up to this timeshare presentation. And then the fallout behind every one of those was so terrible. I had so much PTSD from that I said, oh my gosh, I never want to sell anything ever again. If I get enough education, I won't need to do that. And so that's exactly what I did. I went and got a master's degree and thought I was pretty freaking cool doing that. And I'm good at school. I'm good at those types of things. My brain works really well in that respect. And it was an incredibly rude awakening to leave with an education and see that I absolutely did not have the keys to the kingdom. I was going to have to kiss a whole lot of butts and do a whole lot of additional work just to try to climb the corporate ladder and make some money. And that was kicking the nuts. You know what I mean?
Dude, I've got a buddy of mine that I went to school with, and he went to TCU. He got a degree. He became a commercial real estate agent. He started making good money. And like in his mid-30s, all of a sudden he's like, I'm going to go get my master's degree. And I was like, for what? And yeah, he's like, the connections. And I'm like, the connections? I'm like, dude, you're going to go into more debt. You're going to go back to school in your mid-30s. It's crazy how still to this day people feel like that's necessary. If you're not going to be an attorney or a doctor or something like that, it's like, why? I don't, to be a commercial real estate agent, this is crazy. I do it real quick, though. Where'd you get your master's from?
So I went to Louisiana Tech.
Okay. Yeah. Bulldog.
Bulldog. That's right. I love the South. The South is great. I've lived there. I did some ministry work for my church out in the South. Love the South. We wanted to go and have a little bit of an adventure. And Louisiana Tech was unique for my program. They had a pretty cool consulting kind of like firm arm of the program where I could get some real world experience, or at least that was my hope. And we hated it out there. We hated it. My wife and I were out there. And it just wasn't I just wasn't a fit for the school, and my wife wasn't a fit for her job as a nurse. Like, there's times in life where nothing seems to be fitting right, and that was one for us. And I really chalk it up to, man, like I personally feel like there's been so many times in my life where God really like creates friction to push me in a certain direction. Or you have those times where when you're lined up and you're honed in, everything's working the way that should, you're clear on your vision, your direction, and you're in the right place. And that was one of those times where I feel like there needed to be a lot of friction to push us back home. So I'm from Utah, and that's kind of the next leg of my story. And that's how I got started in real estate. In fact, I was, you know, so I went, got this education. I applied for, I'm telling you, I did over 100 applications just to get freaking hired out of school. It was crazy, right? And really quick, back to your thought of people wanting to pay for networks. I'm all for paying for networks, but gosh, like you and I'd much rather go pay for a network and a mastermind than in a traditional school sense. You could get such better information so much more rapidly, get to the money faster in a mastermind rather than giving your money away to the education system.
Dude, you know what I mean? On that note, and I'm assuming some of the information you're going to share later, you know, about what you're doing today is going to be eye-opening. But, you know, I had Amanda Webster on a couple of weeks ago. She talked about how to use business lines of credit. I had Chris Noggle on a couple months ago. He talked about how to be your own bank and infinity banking. And I asked both of them at the end after they explained what they do. I was like, why is this not like readily known information? And it's like, because what we're not taught to go network in these masterminds and stuff like we're taught to go to Louisiana Tech and to get a bachelor's and then get a master's. And then you're $100,000 in debt and you can't even get a job. You know, right. I mean, it's terrible. And it's sad because I'm sure what you were feeling once is like, don't you see this piece of paper I have? Isn't this supposed to be like instantaneous job
or something here? Right.
Don't you know all the tests I passed? You know,
this not real world information that I stored in my brain.
Right. I want to apply it now. I want to do something with it. So
but I love, like, I'm sure you've seen the meme of a Leonardo DiCaprio from the movie Django Unchained, where he's holding up his, he has like that smirk on his face and people paste a phone in his hand. Yes. And they say, the teacher said I wouldn't have a calculator in my pocket. Here I am now. It's so true. Like, there's so many things in the school system that people said, oh, you'll never have this, that like today we do. It just is wild to consider.
It really is. Honestly. Especially for someone my age. I don't know, how old are you?
I'm 37. I just turned 37. Okay,
so I'm 39. So we're basically saying, dude, when we went to school, we were like the last generation where it's like they said that kind of stuff. And it was still kind of on the edge of like, we feel like we're going to have calculators in our pockets, but we're not sure. You know, it's like the internet was coming right out, starting to take over. And it's like, I'm pretty sure I don't need to know this history fact. I could just Google it if I ever really needed it. You know, it's like things have completely changed. So,
and my wife and I talk about this a lot. So our kids are getting to a place where my oldest is 9 and my youngest is 5. We have a 7-year-old, and we were talking about how we want to educate our kids. And specifically, we moved to Puerto Rico just a few months ago. And so it's a unique opportunity to kind of rehash how we want our family to look like. And man, it's a tricky balance between having them be intelligent, productive human beings, but also not like not solely dependent upon Google to learn or gather information either. You know what I mean? And so how do you balance those things? I'm really curious to see over the next decade with AI and some of these other technologies where things will be at, because really, like, we're moving from an age where you need to be able to recall information to really it's a matter of the information's all there. You need to rather be able to manipulate it and scour and use it properly to be able to spit out the result that you're looking for. And if you can do that rapidly and well, for instance, with AI, like the ability to be able to get right information incredibly fast without having to know the information yourself, it's astounding. It really is.
Think about what you just said, though. We're literally moving from an age where it used to be about we were educating ourselves to have information. Now we need to educate our children on how to utilize information. We weren't really taught how to utilize information. It was just, this is algebra. And I remember sitting there, this is calculus. And I was the worst calculus student of all time. I made straight A's in it. But I remember the entire year just sitting in like the back row and my teacher getting mad at me and me looking at him going, I'm never going to use this. I'm not going to do anything that does this. So why am I in this room? Because right. That's what they thought that they needed to teach us. I wish they had taught me how to do, like, you know, debt and credit and, you know, taxes.
My son's going into 4th grade and we're at home working through homework stuff with him. And I look at my wife every single time that we do, and I'm like, he's not going to use any of this. and fourth grade. It's wild to consider.
My son's in fifth grade, and he's homeschooled. And the other day, I was trying to do some work with him. And literally, I looked at him and I said, just shut the book, son. I don't know how to do it. And he goes, don't you do numbers all day? And I said, not this numbers.
No.
I need you how to do simple math to do real estate, but not this. So
it's great. I love the problems where it's like train A is leaving from station at noon and train B is leaving from this station at 1:30 and they're going to go there. You literally are never going to use that. Come on.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So you're in Utah. You said that's how you got started in real estate. So what it was the start? Was it wholesaling, flipping? What were you doing?
Yeah, so I was in corporate America and just realizing, I'm telling you, my first job out of college or out of my master's program, I ended up at a company where within, you know, and it's funny to look back and you just saw signs like I've had an entrepreneurial mindset. A lot of the things that I've approached and it didn't necessarily like jive well with what I was doing. So point in case, I get this job and I'm very much of the mindset that like, look, if you perform and you do a good job of taking care of what your roles and responsibilities are, then you have some flexibility with how you use your time. I think that's like pretty simple, right? It's a simple concept. And so I like when I'm engaged in something, I want to do it really freaking well. I really enjoy being good at whatever it is that I'm trying to strive to be good at. And so within, you know, like the first 4 months of being at the company that I was at, I'm in the top 5% of performers in my department really fast, just because I like that stuff, right? I like being good at what it is that I'm working on. And so I feel like if I'm already there, then I've got some flexibility with my schedule here within reason, right? And I had one of my coworkers pull me aside. She said, hey, can we go talk in the parking lot? And I've never been asked to go speak in the parking lot before.
Right.
I'm like, well, crap, you know what happened? Something's wrong. And so we go to the parking lot and she said, hey, our boss, she was in my department. So our boss, his name was BJ, which was a fitting name here. She says, BJ is having people in our department follow you around and report back on how you're using your time. And I said, really? How do you know that? She said, because I'm one of the ones that's doing it. He asked me to follow you around. And I'm like, holy God. I said, well, thanks for telling me. And I'm somebody that's like, you know, if we have a problem, let's just like solve it and move on. So I go to him and I try to be super cool. And I'm like, look, man, like, you know, I hear that these types of things are occurring. If there's something that I'm not doing, I'm happy to fall in line, just say the word of what I need to do and we're cool. And he oh, no, everything's fine. You're doing such a great job. I'm like, no, I know that you're having people follow me around. He's like, well, who is it? I'm like, I'm not telling you. Come on.
Right.
So long story short, I go to his boss and I say, hey, this is a sinking ship and I want you to be aware of it before it sinks. So that when things start to go awry, like things were clear. And so it takes her to put him and I in the same room and him to apologize and say he was wrong. And I'm just like, man, this sucks. So I start looking for other opportunities. I want to find other ways to make some money. And so, you know, like, I think like a lot of the people, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which was great. And I'm online listening to podcasts and YouTube videos. And a really common theme that was coming up on all this stuff was real estate and how you should have it as part of your portfolio to retire well. And I said, well, if that's where the money is at, where you should be at to retire, why wait to retire? Let's just do that now. Right. And so I started trying to wholesale on the side. I'm literally taking calls in the bathroom at work and I'm stepping out of the parking lot. I'm a totally irresponsible employee.
Right.
And I had one of the biggest blessings of my life. Our branch was, I was the second to last hire. I went to a new company. I was the second to last hire for the entire company, a few hundred employees in the company. Our branch of about 100 employees was shut down Business just made some changes. Our branch was totally shut down. They offered me a position if I wanted to move to California. But I don't think you could pay me enough money to move to California after seeing the shitstorm that is currently California. Ugh. I feel for people out there. And so I called my wife and I said, I'm getting laid off today. But great news, I could go do this real estate thing full time that I've been trying part time now for like 6 to 8 months. I could go do it full time. And she's great, man. She said, great, go and do it then. And so that's exactly what I did. I had a little bit of a runway, 3 months of severance, and we had a side hustle. We were breeding dogs, so we had some money that we were generating there. And so I went for it. And in fact, I would love to know what your thoughts are on this, because I'll give you mine. Most people feel like they're working hard until they're going to lose it all, unless they really like make things happen. Would you generally agree with that?
Dude, could not agree more. And it's hilarious because I get asked this all the time. I've been blessed to have students and people that I've coached and mentored, and a lot of people that come to us, similar situation to you, right? They have a W-2, but they know that that's not what they want to do. So they dabble in the wholesaling, and then they have a side hustle like dog breeding. And so they're like, oh, I have $5,000 saved up. I'll hire RJ. And then RJ is really going to teach me how to take off with wholesaling. And so they hire. And then it's like, okay, my second question that I ask people is how much time do you have to dedicate to this a day? And, you know, they'll be like, well, I get off at 5, so I can be home by 6. And then, you know, I can't call after 8. So 2 hours. And it's like, so we're talking about 10 hours a week. I'm like, that's a day for me. I mean, and I'm your competition, and I've been doing this for a decade, and I have a whole team. I see what you're competing against. I'm one. And it's hilarious because when I look back at our story when we got started, it's similar to you where it was like we went all in on it and there wasn't anything else. So it was like it was either we had money to feed the kids and ourselves and have electricity, or we didn't. And the only way that we were going to have food and electricity was to wholesale a deal. Mm-hmm. Well, when you've got that motivation, guess what? You get deals under contract and people go, How did you do $750,000 your first year off the MLS? And I'm like, because I didn't know any better.
I had to.
And I went and did another one. It wasn't like I was like, holy cow, we're at $500,000. Maybe we should slow down. It was like, no, I was still in fight or flight mode, you know? So I absolutely agree with that.
I love that. Yeah. And that's where the magic really happened. So I felt like I was working my brains out for 6 months. I did one tiny deal. I'd spent $6,500 in marketing. I did one tiny deal that I wholesaled. I made $3,500 of it back. And I'm like, well, shit, man, like I'm out of money. So I'm pretty well like out of money at this point. And my wife is incredible. She says, you know what, Dane, I still believe in you, but we've got to make some money. You got to do some deals or you got to get a job. And I said, you're not wrong. And I told her that I'd apply for some jobs. And I don't know if you've ever had some experiences like this, but I would go to put my hands on my keyboard in order to apply for jobs, and everything about it in me screamed, this is wrong. We're not doing this. And I would take my hands off the keyboard. Things were fine. I'd put them back on. My body's screaming, no, this is wrong. And so unbeknownst to my wife, I applied for no jobs and I kneeled down and I prayed and I said, you know what, God, I feel like you've led me here. I feel like I'm in the right place. I'm working, but things aren't working out the way that I need them to, you know, like, you know what needs to be done. I need your help. I need you to shake some things loose here if you want this to be my path for the time being. And so I said, I went and got a tax delinquent list from my county and I skip traced it. And I said, I am going to call this list over and over and over again until I either make some money or we lose the house and cars to bankruptcy and collections. Like, that's my plan. That's what I'm going to do. And it's incredible how when you're in that state, how magic just seems to happen. And I've done this over and over again where my bank account's been full and then it's been really low. And in those low points, so much magic happens because you have to make it happen. And so I was cold calling. I called this really nice gentleman, gave him my spiel. And instead of immediately, you know, giving me some negative response, he said he wasn't interested in selling. And I'm about to hang up. And there's a long pause. And he says, because it's not worth anything. And I thought, oh, I've never gotten this response so far. Let's dig into this more. So I said,
right.
Oh, you know, like, what do you mean? Tell me more about that. And he says, oh, you know, long story short, he bought this house in he bought it in the crash, like at the bottom at in an auction, like in 2010. And the house was a hoarder house, was full of trash. His plan was to buy it. It was to de-junk it and then to move in. And he had no idea how bad a shape it was in. So he did just that. He bought it cash for like 50 grand, 50 grand. I remember this I'll remember this perfectly forever. He bought it for 50K. He de-junked it. He moved his stuff in. He slept there one night and he said, there's no way in hell I can stay here another day. He left most of his belongings there, moved into his friend's house and had been there ever since.
Wow.
Crazy, crazy. Now, first of all, I hope I get some friends one day that would let me sleep on their couch for 6 years because I am not that friend, but maybe I'll find them one day. And second, I was foaming at the mouth. So I said, you know, what if I could put you in a position where I got you all your money back? You were even, you know, all that we could pay your taxes. That's how I found him. He's tax delinquent. Pay your taxes, get your money back, you'll be even. And he said, oh my gosh, if you can do that for me, that would be incredible. And so I said, you know, where do you live? And I'm trying to drive over there as fast as humanly possible.
Right.
Get this contract inked. So I did. I go over there, we ink it. Really nice guy, just in a bad spot. And man, I tell you, like, when I walked into that house, I still hadn't seen it. Walked in the house. There's this stack of mail there and postcards from like 5 years worth of mail. I mean, just a stack. And I found that deal because I called him because I was proactive. And I mean, all sorts of problems over the next 30 days. But we ended up closing that deal. And I made 70 grand on that wholesale assignment. And that was as much as I was supposed to make in corporate America when I was working in it the whole year. That really blew my mind.
Yeah, that's a life-changing deal, right? Mm-hmm. And when you have those kind of deals, I wouldn't say fall on your lap, but because you earned it. But it's like you said, it was that one little sentence, right? Like, yeah, I'm not looking to sell it because it's not worth anything. Talk about like the emotions that you felt during that. Cause right. You were somewhat desperate at the time.
Oh, absolutely desperate. Yes.
Absolutely. So you're probably like, just don't screw up. Right. Like just don't run them off. Don't sound too excited during this moment. Right.
Well, absolutely that. And then, I mean, I kind of glossed over some of the problems. Like, so he was in bankruptcy. And one of my mentors that's helped me a ton to this day, he said, you know what, Dane, this deal's dead because he's in bankruptcy. You're not going to get it out. Like, just cut your losses and move on. And I'm thinking, look, like, I don't have any losses to cut. Like, I've got to make this freaking thing happen. If there's something here, until we get to a place where there is indeed like a line of, hey, that nothing can be done, then I'm going to push it. But we've got to see. We got to get there first. And so he ended up having no assets. The reason he filed bankruptcy was to stop the property being sold at the tax auction. He didn't have any other debts wrapped up in the bankruptcy. So we were able to contact the bankruptcy attorney, get the property released on the premise that we were going to pay all the taxes and get that debt squared away. And then we were clean. And right. So, yeah, we were able to, yeah, I was able to push it to the finish line. And talk about a roller coaster of emotions, from like euphoria and getting the contract signed to like depression when I learned there is a bankruptcy, thinking this deal is likely dead, back to euphoria when we get the bankruptcy attorney to say, oh no, we're good, to getting it sold. And I'm just praying, I'm like, God, we're sitting at the closing table, I'm like, please, we're here. Just let this thing close. I've heard so many horror stories about deals falling apart at the closing table. But it went, you know, it went silky smooth. And the biggest shift from that was the mindset shift of seeing that I could make as much money in one deal as I was supposed to make in a whole year. And it changed everything.
Talk about what that meant for your wife during that moment. Because I think this is, it sounds like you have an amazing wife that's been supportive, but a lot of people, their significant others are not supportive.
Right.
And it takes like that moment, like a deal like this, where suddenly it's like, okay, I do believe in this. What was that conversation like when the $70,000 hit the bank account and it's like, okay, I think this could be real now. This is something that, because it was, yeah, you were all in on it, but now it's like, now we really can be all in on it, honey. Right.
Right. Right. Exactly. And where I remember us both looking at the check, it was like $71,000 and some change. And I was, I mean, I just feel so many emotions, but just like, just blessed that we could have that opportunity and her feeling the same, and seeing, it's so nice when reality reaffirms your beliefs, especially belief in somebody else, and her belief in me to be able to see that through was just, you know, just remarkable for both of us. And so, you know, I've done a lot of different things as an entrepreneur since, and she's been supportive the whole way, which is remarkable. And you do, I feel like you nailed it, where for your significant other, if you have somebody, you need to get to a place where you can show there's fruit, right? There's fruit here from your efforts of things actually working and building a belief structure that, hey, like, I'm not perfect and I don't know everything, but I can rub a couple quarters together and make it turn into more. And it's a beautiful thing when you can get there.
Well, you touch base on something there, though, that I think is important. Your faith. You have faith. You reached out to God and you said, hey, God, like, feel like this is what I'm supposed to do. But brother, man, I need some proof. Like, if you really want me to stick with this, I got to have something. And that's essentially the same thing your wife was saying. Like, hey, I have faith in you, but honey, we got to eat. You know, I mean, we got to have money to pay the bills. Like, it's either got to happen through this or you got to go do something else. And it's amazing to see how you both had faith in the process, that you stuck with it, and then that led to inevitably the career path that you went down and the success that you had. So how long were you doing real estate before you started dabbling into something else?
Yeah, so I mean, I've been investing in real estate for almost a decade. It's been about 8 years now. And I was laser focused. So I listened to enough content where people are like, look, if you want to be good at something, you want to make some money, then like laser focus on one thing. And I was like, okay, my one thing is going to be wholesaling. And I would love to tell the listeners that I had this like beautiful, I remember listening to these same podcast episodes when I was starting and they're like, oh, I went and I sent a piece of mail and I did this big deal and now I've got like 20 deals in the pipeline and I just think that it's going to be beautiful forever. And that was not my experience. So I went and I made this big check and it was great, but I still didn't have the skill set to be able to go and like repeatedly do this consistently, right? I needed to build that skill set. And so I went and kind of just like the example you gave, my hope was that I could purchase the right coaching, and the right coaching would do the work for me. I think a lot of people have that hope, right? But the fact of the matter is you got to be the one to put in the work. Even if you have the best information, you got to put in the work. And frankly, you got to put in a lot of it. And so I did. I went and bought some coaching, and I've had some great coaches. In fact, I'm a huge advocate for coaching. You can get to the front of the line. It's like the fast pass at Disney World, right? You get at the front of the line, you get there faster. If you can pay to play, I can't overstate the importance of that. And I eventually ended up, I was on this yo-yo that I think a lot of people find themselves. You make some money and then you spend, thinking you're doing the right things until you're back to like almost nothing. And you're like, oh, shit, I've got to make some money now. And then you scramble and then magic happens. You make some money. And then you're like, OK. And then the bank account dwindles again. And I was like, OK, I'm tired of this. Shout out to Joe Dillon. I found Joe in Florida and I just couldn't get our business to get over 300K a year. I was so frustrated about that because I knew I could make more. And I found Joe. And I like Joe. He'd been to where I wanted to go. And I really liked that he had systems and processes, which was what I was lacking at the time. And so I once again, I made a bet in faith that I thought this was the next right step. I felt really good about it. And in about, I think it was 18 months with Joe's help. He helped me with the systems and processes and building a small team where we're able to get to some scale. So we went from 300K a year to 1.4 million. Nice. And I was there. I eclipsed the seven-figure annual mark, which was one of my big goals. I was able to get there. And we had a really lean team. That was one of the best parts. Profit margins were really nice. I think we were doing about a 40% profit margin. And I crushed it that year, which was so much fun. And we were really blessed.
Dude, you know what's hilarious is I just did every Tuesday I do a live. And it's normally like some foundational element to wholesaling that I feel like doesn't get talked about enough. And I've said it, you called it the yo-yo effect. I called it the roller coaster effect, where Your bank account looks like this, right? Yes. That's very common for wholesalers. And I just did this live 2 weeks ago. And in the live, I broke it down into like six or seven different constraints that cause the roller coaster effect. Constraint number one, you're listening to the wrong people. And it's amazing. You said you had coaches, but you couldn't get past that. But then as soon as you listen to the right person, you went from 300 to 1.4. I mean, it's like
crazy.
I mean, it's insane. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've always said. That's like one constraint. There's the other constraints where it's like, you know, you're not consistent with lead generation. You don't know how to talk to sellers. You don't know how to find good deals, all the different stuff. But that one is the one where I see people get stuck, where it's like, well, so-and-so said this and this person said that. And so they're just lost as to what to do. And it's hilarious. The little hedgehog behind me right here, that's because hedgehog concept, right? One focus on one thing. To be great at that one thing. You had that. You had wholesaling as your hedgehog concept. You just needed someone to say, here's how you do it the right way, and you can build it up. So you scaled up to 1.4. Where did you go from there?
Yeah, so I scaled up to 1.4, and my wife had this really cool vacation she wanted us to go on as a family. And I said, great, let's do it. But I want to do a few more deals. I love doing deals. You know, like when you're in the zone and things are working, man, there's nothing. Well, there's not much better. It's great.
Right.
And she looked at me. My wife seems to be the one that brings a lot of wisdom to me in the right timing. And she said, you know what, Dane, you said that you built this business not only for the financial benefits, but for the freedom as well that it ought to bring. And you're just not that free. And you know, a lot of people talk about this beautiful day where you have a team running all your stuff and you can go sit on a beach and the money just rolls in and it's free and passive. And that's a beautiful concept in a vacuum. There's very few people that actually accomplish that, at least with a wholesaling business. You and I know a handful of them, you know, but there's not many. And there's a number of reasons we could talk about that.
Very, very few.
Yeah, right. It's a very difficult business to systemize and scale and to keep running without you like doing a lot. Well, without you being relatively involved, you know, like you. And when I say relatively involved, I think you could be, you know, like relatively involved somewhere between like 5 and 15 hours a week and run the ship pretty well. You know, like so that's like a reasonable measure of freedom. But man, still, like with my team running things, I'm still involved. You know, you have a lawsuit, you've got to jump in as the owner. You have fires, like you've got to jump in. And it's stressful. And I felt kind of like I felt change coming when I moved from corporate America to real estate. I felt the same feelings where I feel like God is like, dang, change is coming again. And when I feel those things, you know, you have a few different options. Do you know who Michael Singer is, the author of The Surrender Experiment and The Untethered Soul? Have you read either of these books?
I have not.
You should read both of them immediately. They are, in my opinion, they're my two favorite business books, period. There's nothing even close.
Enough said.
Yeah. Do it. I love these. And the reason that I love them is because you have a few different sentiments. Well, I should say hustle culture is a huge thing today, especially in real estate, and for a good reason, right? If you're not putting in the work, it's just not going to work. It's not going to work, period, right? There's a season for hustle, but I would argue there's a right way to work, a right way to hustle. And you can hustle and you can fight against reality, you can fight against universe and God and the way that things are, or you can work with it. You can swim with the tide, with the current, and things can work to your benefit. They can work a lot more smoothly and seamlessly. And that's the general premise of Michael Singer and the books that he writes is, hey, you know, like if you go with the flow, then things can work, you know, pretty seamlessly and really kind of like magic. And so that's the way that I'd been approaching real estate. And that's the way I wanted to approach this next change that I felt like was coming. And so I nailed down, I prayed and I said, you know what, God, if change is coming, if it's your will, here's a few things that I would like for this change to include for this next go around. I want to have more freedom. I want to make more money and I want it to be way more passive than what I'm dealing with real estate, with the lawsuits, with the FTC compliance, with all this BS. Yep. I want it to be easier, at least in those respects. And so I'm open, lead me. And I was kind of getting to a place where I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs get to a place where you kind of get burnout or tired with what you've been doing, right? So like I'll give you an example with real estate. So when I was building my wholesaling business, that was a ton of fun. And I love doing the deals. I love structuring the deals. I love being the one finding them and doing the marketing and selling. And then I started getting tired of being the one on the phones all day. So optimize that, outsource it. Now I'm not doing that. And I'm focused. I'm like, oh, I like selling the deals. I'm doing the dispo. And then I kind of get burnt out with that. Now I'm like, okay, I want to work on the systems. And then I get burnt out with that. And then, you know, like I get to this place where I'm like, okay, I kind of have this system running and I'm bored in general with just the way that I've built this business. I want to do something different. And you've got to find, I haven't found a perfect scenario or solution for this, but there's this balance. In fact, if you have a good like A plus B equals C, a formula, I would love to know it. Where do you find the balance between like shiny objects and a true like proper pivot?
You know, that's an interesting thing because it's a problem for a lot of entrepreneurs, right? Is by nature, what we get excited about is the next idea.
Right.
I think at some point in time, you have to fall in love with execution and be proud of the execution. And if you don't, then you're always going to be chasing something. And I think there's also just the nature of society today with social media. It's always telling you to do something else. I say always. That we're on a podcast where you're about to talk about oil and gas and crypto, which I'm not doing, right? I mean, sure. So even in this, I mean, you're going to talk about how that's amazing. Sure. I have gotten to the point now where I succeeded, I failed, I figured out why I failed. It's because I chased, and I should have just been okay with executing. The ones that actually succeed long-term are the ones that fall in love with talking about how they executed over and over and over again. And that's something that I've fallen in love with. The other thing is I want to go back to you talking about the hustle culture. So where does hustle come from? Hustle is mainly talked about in sports, right? I mean, that's where the term really kind of originates from. It's like you see a kid or, you know, an athlete give great effort, and it's like, wow, what amazing hustle. So then when you translate that to business, it's like, okay, how was the hustle noticeable? Well, it was because at first they weren't giving that effort, and then for a short burst, they gave extraordinary effort, and then it stopped. And hopefully it's because they got a result, right? And so then you're praised for amazing hustle. I always tell my son who wants to be, you know, he wants to go to the NHL. That's what he wants to do. Cool. And I always tell him, I'm going to give you every opportunity you can, son. But I always tell him, it's never a compliment for someone to say you had amazing hustle. Because all that means is at some point in time, they saw you not playing with the exact same energy that they gave you the compliment. That, right? They saw you do something and they go, wow,
I like that.
I didn't know you could do that. So I never
want really someone good for a very short period of time. Wow.
Right. I never want someone to look at our company and go, dude, you guys have great hustle. It's like, no, we're just a machine. See, a machine just moves at the pace that it moves at. And it never slows down. It never goes faster. It just is. It is what it is. And I think that's where you can kind of eliminate that hustle culture where it's like, no, dude, be all in while you're at work. And then be all in when you're not at work, right? Go be all in at your workout and your nutrition and your faith and your family and all of that other stuff. But when you're here, just give 100%. That's all you can give is 100%. That's
agreed.
It.
And so, in effect, to add to your analogy, I love that analogy. I'm a big basketball guy. I love basketball. Yeah. And there are times where, regardless of whatever it is you're participating in, there's times where like you're hustling and it feels like a hustle. And then there's the times where you're in the zone. And I would argue you're doing more than when you feel like you're hustling, but like you're dialed in and it's just like this flow state. And if you can learn what that feels like, then you can recreate it over and over and over again. And then, like you're saying, you're able to build this machine that just works. And I loved your focus on execution there. Yeah. Whether it's whatever, wherever it is that you choose to spend your time, if you can get to be a master at execution, you can do anything at a very high level.
Yeah. And I mean, let's be honest. When we think about changing what we're doing or adding something to what we're doing as an entrepreneur, a lot of that, majority of the time, has something to do with your lack of happiness in your business or an ego play, right? Where it's like the other day I was on the Investor Lift podcast. And they asked me, they were like, well, what are you doing for investments? What are you doing with your money that you're making? And I'm like, I don't understand what you're asking me. Like, I'm the real estate guy. I do real estate.
Right.
I mean, I'm like, if I want to do crypto, I would have to learn that. I would have to hire a crypto guy. I'd have to have someone. Like, legitimately, I wouldn't even know where to start. I know that I own two Ethereum somewhere, and I cannot figure out how to get in the wallet. Like, that's how lost I am. It's like, I don't like it. There's like 16 words written down somewhere in one of these drawers on how I can get into my wallet. I'm not good at it. I need help. I'm good at real estate, though.
Sure.
So I
like that. I think that's a great example. And it's like any pursuit. I'm sure you were the same at real estate, right? When you first started. I remember going to like my first RIA meetup and they're talking about cash on cash returns and IRR and ARV. And I was like, oh shit, man, I don't know what any of this stuff means. Yeah. I got a lot of work to do here.
Dude, I still, like, someone asked me the other day in a comment, like, hey, what's the ideal cap rate for a buy and hold investor? And I'm like, dude, what, first of all, what city? Like, what are we even talking about? Him? Yeah, it's like, no, this is not something that we base things off of. So you prayed to God, you said, hey, I need more money. I want more passive. I want more time, freedom. Where did that lead you?
Yeah. So back to the idea of like, what's the difference between a shiny object and a true, like, proper pivot? And at least in my experience, and you've got to, you know, like, I think this is a really important topic. You as an entrepreneur, for the listeners, like, you've got to figure out what that needs to look like for yourself. Yep. So I took a step back and I just did the math, right? I did the math and I said, okay, I've built this company where we were wholesaling and we were flipping, and I was building a rental portfolio too. I had 25 doors, and I said, okay, for real freedom, how much money do I need to make on a monthly basis without like a whole lot of stress and brain damage to be reasonably comfortable? I mean, I saw this chart on social media that popped up the other day, and I feel like it was fairly accurate in my experience. Pretty much they said that anywhere in the United States, you need to make close to 200K a year, give or take, to be comfortable. Somewhat comfortable. And I would say in my personal experience, yeah, like if you can get to 20K a month, that's a pretty nice place where you can live in a pretty good house. You can drive pretty nice cars. You can go on some vacations. But that's far from balling. Like, this isn't like Lambos and mansions territory. Far from it, in my opinion.
And if your kid plays travel hockey, you are in poverty.
Yeah. No, seriously. Yeah. Seriously, that's the reality of this. So many people, I think, underestimate how much money it truly takes. Look, like, if you want to go and have the boat and you want to have the truck and you want to do traveling sports, like, the fact of the matter is you probably need to get closer to 400 or 500K to really, like, make all those things comfortably happen, where you're not somebody month to month. You're like, oh, can I make the boat payment and the car and the mortgage?
Comfortably make it happen, right? There's right. always the way you can make things happen, but I mean, it's at times where it's like, what am I chasing after? Like, it constantly feels like, dude, I don't want to sound old, but I mean, dude, we've gotten to a point where inflation has hit us pretty hard. I
mean, it's in the nuts, right?
It is expensive to do. Like, to eat.
Yes.
It's across the board. I mean, I look at people and I'm like, the jobs that I had when I was in my 20s, I don't know how people can survive off of that kind of money.
I don't either. Like, you couldn't. You would have to get government assistance. You couldn't.
Yeah. Yeah. So back to your story. I just had to add that, because it's like, dude, I feel that.
Yeah, exactly. So if you don't want to, like, be impoverished and live off the government teat, then you've got to, you know, let's roll with this idea. You've got to make, you know, roughly, let's call it 20K a month to live, like, reasonably comfortably. And that's not like anything crazy. And so one of the really common numbers thrown out there, now I know this can vary hugely across where you may buy real estate, but a really common figures, people are like, look, if you could make $300 net per door per month, then, like, that's a decent rental. Would you generally agree that's an all right rental?
That's pretty common number thrown around.
Okay, let's run with it just for easy math. So if you want to make 20 grand a month passively, let's say your goal is freedom and to be able to do what you want with your time, then if you're going to do it with rentals and you want to make 20K a month, that essentially is 66. We round up, that 67 doors, making 300K net per month to be able to do that, right? Now, that's not like the craziest number, 66 units. And if you're listening to this episode and you're like, oh my gosh, that's an insane amount, you could do that in one deal. Like, you could do that in one deal if you partner with the right people and you position yourself properly. Like, that can be done. But man, then you factor in, and I don't know if you've had, I know you've had some of these experiences because you've been in the game long enough like I have.
I've had all of them that you're about to say.
Right. I mean, the $300 a door per month sounds great until you have a tenant go and destroy your property and literally your cash flow for 5 years is gone in an instant on that unit because of the damage done. You have a lawsuit that occurs because something happens with the tenant. 5 years of cash flow, poof, gone. I mean, I could go on and on and on and on with scenarios where this rosy scenario, all of a sudden, all the cash flow, it's not there. In fact, you're coming out of pocket. That 20K is gone. Plus, you're coming out of pocket with more money to fix the issue at hand.
I mean, evictions, just vacancy in general, air conditioners, boilers, foundation problems. I mean, I just sold a rental that when I sold it, I knew I was going to have to do a little bit of cosmetic updates to sell it, right? It became vacant. What I didn't account for is $24,000 in foundation. It had been tenant occupied for 7 years. We had regularly, once a quarter, gone over there and walked it, but it had furniture all in it. There was no cracks in the wall. Essentially, the house went like this. And you couldn't tell until the furniture was gone. $24,000. Another one, funny story. I decided I wanted to buy in locations where the cash flow is better. So I wanted to beat your $300. So I started buying in some of those C and D class areas where you can get
the I do like that.
Yeah. But there's no equity, right? But it's like, but who cares? I don't care about the equity. I care about the cash flow. Firework on 4th of July got shot in the window and burned the house down. I mean, we have insurance, but there's no equity. There's no value, and I just lost the house. And guess what? You can't build a house for what you just got paid out. So now you just own dirt. It's over.
It's over.
It's game over. Whatever you thought you had, either you didn't have it. So, yes, I completely understand all of that with rentals. It's not passive either. It's very
active. No, it's not exactly. You're either managing your team that's managing the rentals, or you're managing the manager that they tend to have a shelf life, in my experience, anywhere from 6 months to 6 to 36 months, and you're finding a new one most of the time.
Yeah, you're asking them, why haven't you contacted the tenant who hasn't paid us?
Right.
It's like, right. Well, this is dumb. I could have just contacted the tenant and gotten my money. Right. Why am I managing the manager?
Right, exactly. So with all of these things being the case, I think it's a beautiful opportunity to, I just took a step back and I said, okay, what do I like about real estate? I know what I don't like, but what do I like about the business model? Because there's some really cool things happening here in real estate. Well, the thing that I love about it is I love the tax benefits. There is nothing that I've discovered that is more sexy in, as a United States citizen. Now, we can talk about getting rid of your citizenship and some of that. We're not going to get into that. That's some craziness. We'll leave that alone. We could do a whole other show on it. But on the premise that you're going to be a United States citizen, keep your citizenship, I can't find much better ways to get depreciation for taxes than real estate. I can't find them. Now, sure, you could do some different things. I've talked to people that have LLCs and offshore money, and you run risks there with the IRS, right? I'm not going to get into all that. If you want to run things in such a way where you're not looking over your shoulder forever, just anticipating when the IRS comes for you, well, then the tax benefits from real estate are unmatched, in my opinion. All right. So I like that part of it a lot. I also really enjoyed the appreciation and the cash flow when I could get it. That was great. I love those. So those are the three things that I really like about real estate. The tax benefits, the appreciation, and the cash flow. That's what I love. Now, what I hated about it is I hated having to build a team and trying to run that and scale it around all those systems, all the headache. I really didn't like that part of it. And so I said, okay, let's take these things that I like and let's find a way just to do more of that. Well, how do you take part in more cash flow and more tax benefits and in more appreciation without running a team, without doing all that, all the odds and ends? We have to have money. You have to be the money person that's bringing capital to deals and being a silent partner, working with the right partners. Well, that's how you do those types of deals. That's how you get the benefits without a lot of the headache. Now, there's going to be headache no matter what, but you can get rid of a lot of the headache. And I said, okay, then I need to be the money guy. How can I grow my money more rapidly than what I'm currently doing so that I could do more of the things that I like in real estate? Because once again, real estate is the jam, in my opinion. It's just a matter of finding where you like to fit in, right?
Right.
So I have a handful of buddies that have done really well with oil and gas. I have some others that have done really well with crypto. And oil and gas was the same type of thing as real estate, where you have a lot of the same benefits, but scaling a team there is difficult. And so I said, okay, let's leave that one by the wayside. I can be a passive investor there. Let's look at crypto. So my buddies have done really well in crypto. I've had a few that have done some wild things, but here's the beauty of that I found with cryptocurrency is I could buy things if I was early. I could be early. I could buy things. I could even make passive income from my portfolio. I didn't need to be a master entrepreneur. I didn't need to spend money in marketing. I didn't need to build a team. But if I was early, I understood the time frames and how the cycles in real estate or in crypto worked. It's really similar to real estate. There's cycles there. If I understood how those things worked, well, I could multiply my money incredibly fast. I could get a 5, I could get a 10, I could get a 50, I could get 100x on my money over a relatively short period of time if I just use those systems well, with once again the intention to grow my capital. So I could go and get more of the benefits from real estate that I like getting, right? So that was my premise. And so I just started digging in. And same as I did before when I pivoted from corporate America to real estate, I just said, God, you know, lead me. This is the direction I'm going to head in. And if there's a lot of resistance, I'm going to take that as a sign that, hey, this isn't the path. And if it works seamlessly, I'm going to say, hey, this is the path, right? Pretty simple. Right. So rocket science.
So on the crypto side, though, I have a question on that, because just based off of what you just said, you were going from a very daily, like you were taking action to control your destiny in real estate. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, if I have a motivated seller, if I go find a motivated seller with a tax delinquent property and I can solve that problem, I can go make $70,000 in like 3 weeks. In crypto, it's like, okay, I understand that there's cycles and there's, you know, you could have knowledge on it, but it's like, all right, I go buy 100 coins and now I just wait. Did that not bother you a little bit? That like there wasn't anything else that you could really like do to make that succeed for you? Did that not?
Well, there are things that you can do. In fact, I love this question because I think it's a concern that a lot of entrepreneurs have. And that's one of the things a lot of real estate people like you and like me too, is you feel like you have a lot of control there, which you do in a lot of respects of the deal. There's also things outside of your control. And I would argue that most investing is similar, where there, if you can understand the things that you can control, understand the things that you can't, if you can find a fine balance there where you're comfortable, well, then there can be a lot of money to be made. And so, yeah, to your question, I found myself where in about 4 months, I'd done a ton of research in crypto. My real estate business was largely optimized here when my team was running it. So I could spend 6 hours a day in crypto, figuring out some of the stuff that was going on there while my team ran the real estate business. And so I did that. And, you know, by putting in a ton of work, I was able to find myself in about 4 months. I found this really cool crypto platform where I started with $5,000. I put $5,000 in. It generated passive income in such a way where it was going so well that I said, well, how can I make $20,000 a month? I really like that metric. Like if you can get to $20,000 a month in passive income, then you could give yourself a lot of freedom. Now that's, once again, that's not Lambos and yachts. That's just some additional breathing room. And I'd work the math backwards and I said, okay, if I use this platform correctly, I need to put in $100,000 and that should turn off $20,000 a month. I was like, wow, that's a whole lot less money that I need to put in real estate to get that money. Let's see what happens. Let's roll the dice. Unfortunately, I was in a place where I could put in 100 and if I lost it all, it would hurt, but I wasn't going to go bankrupt either, right? I was going to be all right. So I didn't. I placed the bet and I wanted to see how it went. So I didn't take into account any appreciation that could occur. And that's where the story gets really juicy. So I put the $100,000 in. And within about 30 days thereafter, 30 to 60 days, prices went and more than doubled. And so instead of $20,000 a month, I was making $50,000 a month passively while I slept with no tenants, toilets, trash, no teams, no lawsuits, no any of that. And the money literally I created money printers and all I had to do was go in there and take profits when I wanted to take them. And that was it. No, that was all. And I think that you get these opportunities where, once again, they don't happen all the time, in my opinion, but you have these signs where it's like, hey, there's something here. And at least for me, I take those as signs and I follow them and I put in more time and effort to be able to figure out those systems. So back to your question, if I wouldn't have had that experience, I think I would probably have a lot of the reservations that you're talking about. But since I was able to go figure out some really cool systems and understand the mechanics of what I could control and what I couldn't, and it worked so well that I was like, hey, there's something here. And I was able to figure out more from there.
So you invest $100,000. It was supposed to spit out 20, started spitting out 50. Guess my question is what keeps you from being like, all right, now it's $200,000 spitting out 100, or it's $300,000 spitting out 150. I mean, why wouldn't you just like quadruple 10x down on that? Because you're spending out free money, right? I mean, what is there a ceiling to that, or could you just go hog wild crazy?
I mean, you could go bananas. You could go absolutely bananas. If I'd had $1 million sitting on the sidelines, I probably would have thrown it in. I probably would have. And I crushed it on that platform. I went and this is crypto, right? So things are volatile. And coming back to putting in the time, I mean, at this point, I've spent my 10,000 hours in crypto to understand how pretty well everything works. Now, it doesn't mean that anybody has a crystal ball and everything goes perfectly. But man, like I, with the volatility in crypto, I mean, a few months I was making 50 and then I was back to 20 and then I was up to 40. And then that system has largely, the buzz and hype around it has died down a lot. And so now, you know, like, my $50,000 is now like, you know, I make a few $1,000s a month and on that portfolio. I've built others. And so that's where like you need to understand how these work and how to treat them. And so I understood that one and I wasn't just building and compounding it. And that's where a lot of people make mistakes is they say, oh, this thing's working so well today. Let's just continue to scale it. When rather, when you understand some of these systems, ones that are working really well, when they're working really well, hey, there's probably an opportunity where you should say, hey, let's not get too greedy. Let's take some chips off the table. Let's take some profits here because you don't need to make it all in one go. So that's what I was doing. I was taking profits on that $100,000. I think I extracted about $400,000 in about 8 months, which was fabulous. I would take that all day and twice on Sunday.
That's basically what you were netting in the real estate side of things in a year.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it was working while I was asleep. And so yeah, that's where to answer your question, when you understand how these systems work, You want to make sure that you have a profit-taking strategy as well, because as good as some of these things can go, they can also, you know, they can stop in an instant too. And so that's where, back to the crypto cycles, real estate, you know, real estate, we tend to have a boom and bust cycle every, what, I think it's like 8 to 17 years, something like that, right? With cryptocurrency, at least up to this point, it's 4. It's almost 4 on the nose, where every 4 years you have this boom and bust cycles. And so if you can understand those, well, then you can have profit-taking strategies. You can understand what things look like, what a good deal looks like, just like real estate. And if you make your money when you buy, right? And so it's the same principles. In fact, all I did was I took the real estate principles that I learned from real estate, I applied them to cryptocurrency, and I haven't bought a scam or something that's gone to zero in multiple years. As long as I stuck to my buy box, my buying criteria, because of the skills that I learned from real estate. So that's pretty cool.
Love it. All right. I got a selfish question to ask, just because I don't know if I should do this or not. So one of my hobbies that I have, and I've done it since, well, really my whole life. I used to do it with my dad and my grandfather, sports betting. Cool. And so I crush it. I mean, I won't say I know how to predict the future. I just know how to play the odds. And
you build a skill set there. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've built it up and I have a lot of fun with it. Right. And so one of my accounts has the ability to extract my money in Bitcoin.
Okay.
And I've never done it before. I've always just been like, nah, just give me my money. Well, I started thinking about it, and I'm like, well, most of the time when I take that money out, I kind of just blow it on something, and it was just like, I don't even know why I really did that. I could have just bought it. And I was like, dude, how many Bitcoin could I have right now if I had just been doing that the whole time? Is it for someone like me that's like, I'm not going to spend 10,000 hours learning crypto?
Right.
Would it
make sense? How should you go about building a portfolio if you're someone that's just going to put a little bit of money in and let it ride?
But would it make sense for me to extract that as a Bitcoin? Like, if I was pulling out $5,000 at a time, does that make sense to do that in Bitcoin? And then 10 years from now, is that going to be worth like so much more than it is today?
I think that's a great question. And let me start by saying I'm not a financial advisor. I don't give financial advice. I'm going to give all those qualifiers. Fact of the matter is, anyone that says they have a crystal ball, they're always a liar. They're always found out. Nobody does. And that's a fact. And so I'll give you my opinion. Have you heard of, do you know what central bank digital currencies are?
I mean, I enough to know what you're probably about to talk about.
Okay, we're going to go the roundabout way, because I think this is incredibly important for everybody to understand. I'm going to leave the tinfoil hat off. We don't need to do anything, any of the craziness. I'm just going to give you facts, okay? So here's a fact. CBDCs are already here. That stands for Central Bank Digital Currency. If you, as a listener, have not heard of this topic, I heavily recommend just go spend like 20 minutes on TikTok or Instagram shorts or YouTube, wherever you like to consume your content, just go wrap your head around it. All the information isn't going to be accurate, and that's fine. You're just trying to get a general idea, wrap your head around this stuff. I'm going to give you a really quick highlight. Central bank digital currencies are live and well in other countries. For instance, they have them in China. And the way that these things work is they are government and central bank controlled. And you can get manipulated and taken advantage of based upon social credit scoring. So, for instance, if you live in China and you jaywalk and CCTV gets you on camera doing that, or you say something against the government on social media that they don't like, well, guess what? They can go in there and they can choose how you can spend your money and where you can spend it, how much gas you can buy. Because maybe you didn't meet your carbon emissions. There's too much that week. So they need to limit your gas. Good luck driving a big diesel truck if that's your thing. They can limit your meat consumption. You know, hey, did you buy too much red meat this week instead of the impossible fake meat? Well, we're going to limit you there. Good luck on buying the amounts of meat that you may want. Like a lot of these things that we assume we have the right to have every single day, those things are going to be government and central bank controlled. They already are in parts of the world. And in the United States released their own CBDC last year. It's been about a year. It'll be a year in July, if I'm not mistaken, called FedNow. You can go do your own research. It's out there. It's live and well. It just hasn't been pushed heavily because I think that if you're the government, you want to push that agenda. Well, you wait for a big catastrophe, and then you pitch it as like, this is the system. We're here to help save people. Now, I said I was going to give you facts. That's an opinion. The facts are is that CBDCs are here, and you've got to ask yourself, well, do you think that things are going to become more digital or less digital over time? I'm in the camp that I think things only become more digital, and that includes our money, all right? So if that's the framework that I'm working off of, and I think our money is going to become more digital than less, then cryptocurrency is here to stay, period, end of the day. It is. It is here to stay. And so you get to make a decision, and you can say, hey, is something like Bitcoin or Ethereum, do you think it's going to be more or less valuable in 10 years? Well, I would argue things that are well adopted, they're likely to be more valuable. As far as Bitcoin itself is concerned, that's an interesting topic because, like, if we go back and we relate it to real estate, so where are the best deals found? Are they typically on or off market?
Off market.
Off market, right? I'm just going to answer this question myself. Bitcoin is not an off-market deal at this point. In fact, it's readily available. You just gave a great example on the sports betting website. You can transfer your holdings to Bitcoin rather than cash. Like, talk about adoption. No, nobody's early to Bitcoin. You're not early anymore. And so where can you be early? That's what I'm asking myself as like an investor, an entrepreneur in general, right? Like, where's the deals at? Well, the deal isn't Bitcoin anymore, in my opinion. Now, I like your ETH play. I think ETH is, I would argue that ETH is still pretty well adopted, but that's a really cool opportunity. In fact, if I was going to convert to anything and it was one of the big ones, I would choose ETH over Bitcoin because I think that has a lot more legs and more upside. But man, here's the way to play crypto, in my opinion. Really freaking simple. Crypto works on 4-year cycles. The fun part is only 12 to 18 months long, and that's it. 12 to 18 months is when you want to be involved. The start of the race, the gun pull, the shot to start the race, it started in April. It started last month for this bull run, and Bitcoin's already back to all-time highs. So that's not the opportunity. You want to find deals that are off-market, if you will, off-market. By the time things get to Coinbase or Robinhood, or, you know, wherever you may like to buy your cryptocurrency, people like me already bought it when it was 50 to 100 times cheaper. By the time it's getting there, people like me are looking to sell it. That is not the time to get in. You want to get in before they get there. You want to buy those things. And then for people like yourself or other people that are heavily involved in their businesses, well, it doesn't have to take a lot of time either. You can just buy, if you will, off-market deals. While they're still cheap, you can hold them for about 12 to 18 months, come back and take profits. And I can show you data examples all day long where if you just did that, there are many scenarios where that money would grow more than all of your efforts in your business and everything else combined. And it's not even close. And that's the opportunity that cryptocurrency is right now.
Damn, Dan, why did we talk about real estate for so long?
I mean, I could talk about crypto all day long. Man.
We should just start talking about crypto. We should have been like, well, he wholesaled for a while, but now he does something else. So let's talk about that. Oh, man, that's awesome. So, but let me ask you this. Like, if I say I do have the, you know, the Ethereum, and then I do have some Bitcoin, could I just take that and use that to buy some of these cheaper coins, or like you said, these off market? Can you transfer? Is that something that you can do?
Yeah, absolutely. There's ways. It's I tell people all the time, crypto is like real estate, where it's not rocket science. It's just knowing what to do and then doing it. Right. So right. Like, how many times have you been to a real estate conference and people are like, here's how to do a deal? Doing deals isn't the hard part. It's going out there and doing the work to find them and then actually like doing that enough that you make money at. It's not rocket science.
Right.
Cryptocurrency is the same thing. So if you just learn how, so you're correct. Like the way the entry point for most of the guys in our mastermind, in our community is ETH. They're going to go in and buy ETH and then they can use the Ethereum to then go buy the other, if you will, like off market secret cryptocurrencies where you can go and get some of these big runners. I'm telling you, RJ, like you don't need to bet the farm to buy a farm in crypto, which is wild. And I could give you examples for days. We just had one of our newer students that had only been in our mastermind, I think for 3 weeks. Now, full disclosure, this is a home run. This doesn't happen all the time, but it happens and it's wild. He turned $3,000 into over 300K in 5 days. You don't get that anywhere but crypto. That was wild. I have another one of our guys and most of our guys are real estate investors. They just want a little bit of exposure into cryptocurrency and we help them do that. And another one of our guys, he was making more in passive income with $5,000 in crypto than he was with 5 rental properties with 50% equity.
Yeah.
Like it's not rocket science. It's just knowing how to do it. And so that's what we help people do every single day. And the beauty of it is we're still early right now. We should theoretically have another 10 to 16-ish months for this bull run to be able to really grow money very rapidly and then buy more real world assets.
Love it. So how can people find out more about your community?
If they want to come and check out what we're about, we do exploration call. We call them exploratory calls. We do them all the time. Or if you want to jump on the call, we've helped people recover crypto that they feel like they've lost. Just like you said, I've got these seed words out here. What do I even do with this?
I need an exploratory call for that.
Yeah, we'd love to help you. I've helped people recover crypto bunches of times. We've saved people from scams. We've put people in really good spots where they've made a bunch of money. We do all that type of stuff. So if you want to come in and check out what we're about, you can find me on social media under Dane Ballwinkle or my, we have a stage names in crypto. My stage name is Money Talk with Dane or Money Talk _ Dane. You can find me on all the social platforms. We do a YouTube show almost every single day, Monday through Friday, live, where you can come in and ask questions. And we answer all sorts of that type of stuff. If you want to join us for one of our events, we do events that are almost free where we help people do crypto. You can come and find out more about that at cryptocashflowsystems.com. And we'd love to plug in. Send me a DM. I'm the one that manages all my DMs. Love to plug in and help any way that we can. We're helping people like, do you know Robert Allen, for instance, RJ?
Yeah.
So Robert Allen, one of the real estate OGs, Robert's done over $1.5 billion in revenue during his career. We've helped people like Robert Allen in our mastermind. We've got some of the biggest names like Nick Perry. We've got Brent Bowers from Wholesaling Inc. We've got Tim Brotz from Legacy Wealth. We've got all the biggest hitters. And our intention is, once again, to be able to use crypto to grow our wealth over the next year and then use real estate to preserve the wealth. I'm biased. There is no better way, though, in my opinion, to grow your money over the next 12 months and then have financial freedom forever than what we're doing right now. We love to have everybody come and participate who may want to participate in that.
Love it, man. And on that note, I think it's time that I have Nick Perry on the podcast. I'm just saying, you mentioned Nick, Amanda Webster mentioned Nick, Scotty T mentioned Nick. I mean, and I love Nick. I just saw him in Fresno at an event. I don't know why he's never been on the podcast before, but I think when it's like 3 out of the last 4 podcasts and the only one he wasn't mentioned on was a solo one I did by myself. So, Nick, I apologize that I didn't find a way to bring you up in that podcast I did by myself. It's time to get him on here. Dane, bro, appreciate, love your story, man. Love your story. Appreciate you sharing all the wisdom that you did today. Great conversation. Guys, let us know what you thought about the podcast today. Drop a comment in there for Dane. Check out his community. And again, remember, we only accept 5-star reviews. If you didn't like today's episode, normally I say go to Steve Trang's podcast and leave a 3-star review. But I was just on Steve Trang's podcast, so we don't want to do that. So let's see. Who else do I not really like? No, it's still just Steve Trang. Go to Real Estate Disruptors and leave a 3-star review. Outside of that, only leave us 5-star reviews, guys. Dane, appreciate you, brother. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks, man.